Hello.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host of Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Our guest today is Donna Winnett.
Can you please
Our guest today is Donna Winnett, founder of Family, Friends, and Individuals for the Mentally Ill. And with us also is Harry McHugh, who is also a member of FFIMI. And they are going to be talking about the necessity for the Department of Mental Health to be involved in the treatment of the incarcerated. And we want to see, according to, and Donna will be talking about this, to see the removal of Bridgewater State Hospital from the Department of Corrections and private health care to the Department of Mental Health. So we are going to be introducing now Donna Winnett and Harry McHugh. And Donna, both of you want to introduce yourselves and let the audience know a little bit about what you've been doing and what you're going to be talking about today. I am going to let you be the host for today so that you can talk about all these issues without interruption from me. Thank you both for being on and anyone else that comes on from your organization and beyond. Thank you so much. You're on, Donna.
Hi, Leona. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you fine now. We've been having a little audio problems yesterday and today, but it seems like it's resolved.
Oh, that's excellent. Thanks, Leona, for having me. Thank you for everything you do for an entire community of persons suffering under incarceration and for their families. I'm very grateful for you.
Donna, I want to thank you, and I always speak of you highly because what you are doing is something that should have been done years ago by the people in the communities. We have so many people incarcerated with mental health issues that have never been addressed, and the contracted providers going into the prison are just simply not satisfactory, not effective. So please go on, and I'm going to put myself on mute and let you and Harry take over. Thank you so much, both of you, for being on.
Thanks, Leona. Well, I'm Donna Winan of FEMI, and that stands for Family and Friends of Individuals with Mental Illness. And we're advocating for those who have serious mental illness, who because of their behavioral issues, because of their brain disorders, they unfortunately become justice involved. So what we want to do is we want to be a voice and provide a voice for people with serious mental illness that are enmeshed in the criminal justice system. And our mission is to advocate for persons suffering from that mental illness involved in that system and assure that they are provided a continuum of proper psychiatric care, treatment, therapeutic treatment, and services across the entire spectrum of the legal and justice systems. And it is for that that we stand. That's where our heart is. Our loved ones are in our hearts. It is for them and for all of those persons like them, with them. We fight for them. So just a little update. FEMI met yesterday with Senator Cindy Friedman. We've had, I'd say a four-year-long relationship with her. She is doing everything she can to keep people in a secured facility rather than a jail and prison. And we have alerted her to the issues of Bridgewater State Hospital. And she said, as long as someone is in a secured facility, like a good Department of Mental Health facility, if they are found sentenced but with mental illness, they can be sent there. So that's our goal. And I'd love Harry to weigh in a bit, too. Harry, go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. We're here today to talk a little bit about Bridgewater State and why it should fall under the helm of the Department of Mental Health. And you know, I've been here for about a year. I've seen the amount of work that Donna Winnett and her husband Robert has done, and it's just incredible the amount of time that they put into this and trying to help loved ones, basically basic issues to try and get resolved under the Department of Corrections is awful. The team that's working at Bridgewater State right now is WellPath Recovery Solutions in the Department of Corrections. So, of course, there's just so much conflict there that nothing ever gets resolved, nothing gets done. So I've done a lot of research on WellPath. I've done a lot of research on the Department of Corrections. And with WellPath, here's the issue with WellPath. They've had 1,400 lawsuits. Many of those lawsuits are in prisons. They've had a handful of lawsuits out of Bridgewater State Hospital. Their founder was arrested for bribery. Imagine that, the founder of the company that oversees the health care for individuals at Bridgewater State Hospital was arrested for bribery. That leads to very poor culture. So if the founder of a company is doing that, what is the administration? How are they? Are they the same type of culture that's running Bridgewater State Hospital? Possibly. Do they take after the founder? Possibly. I do know one thing. They do not advocate well for the loved ones with the Department of Corrections. Latest report from the Disability Law Center says that the employees themselves are afraid to speak about the issues that are within Bridgewater State Hospital because of retaliation. They don't want to go to the administration because they feel like they're going to lose their jobs. And, you know, I can continue and speak about all of the details of WellPath Recovery Solutions, but I will say we are making some small strides on some very small issues, such as bringing a vending machine into a visiting room. It took us 4 months to get that done. We need to get this into the hands of the Department of Mental Health, and we need to do it sooner than later. And the only way, the only avenue that I see that we have an opportunity to get this done is through our legislators. It doesn't matter. I've tried everything. I've sent letters. I've spoken with the governor's office, the prior governor's office, Governor Baker. We're currently in touch with Governor Haley's office. We're doing everything we can to transfer this over to the Department of Mental Health. And even if we can't get it totally transferred right now, I think a solution would be to continue to allow WellPath and the Department of Correction to do what they do or what they don't do, but bring in the Department of Mental Health and to allow them to come in and oversee, you know, these two departments that are currently overseeing loved ones at Bridgewater State Hospital. Nothing is improving. Everything is actually, it's just awful. I can go on and on, but it's awful to see with my own eyes and my own hear with my own ears what's going on there.
Okay, and that brings me, Harry, to the goals that are different. So the goals, and this comes from a lead attorney of the Disability Law Center who, you know, gave this good, well-spoken, short description that fits. So she says the goals of the Department of Mental Health are all about recovery in the least restrictive environment that respects the civil rights of the patients. That's the most humane the most humane approach is the Department of Mental Health goal of recovery in a least restrictive environment. Now, Bridgewater State Hospital, which that same attorney says, this was on a recent podcast, and she said, Bridgewater State Hospital looks like a prison, it acts like a prison, it is a prison. And what she has gone on to say is that the goal of Bridgewater State Hospital is to restore competency. Now, these are people with legal charges. So their goal is to restore competency, to send them to county jails So it's not for really recovery. It's to restore competency. You know, recovery may come with that, but then it's to send them to county jails into the criminal justice system. So here, if they have an alleged criminal incident, it when they're in the throes of mental illness and incompetent, yet they'll restore them and say, you were incompetent when this alleged incident happened, but now we're going to put you into a county jail with little or no medical or psychiatric treatment. We're going to allow you to decompensate. And this lead attorney has quoted the families who said it's like they're taking these patients from Bridgewater State Hospital and pushing them off a cliff. And she repeated that, pushing them off a cliff. And I want to say that here's another thing about Massachusetts. It's an outlier. So it's only one of two states in the whole country, in America, to place this population, that's those with serious mental illness, in the justice system under the Department of Correction. Now, the National Association of Mental Illness, NAMI, they recognize this. And what they say is, here's what they state. For decades, the Commonwealth has asked its state prisons to take responsibility for people who have issues such as mental illness and substance abuse disorders. In virtually every other state in the country, these same individuals would be cared for by the state mental health and public health systems. People who have not been convicted of a crime, those found not guilty due to mental illness, and all who meet the strict criteria for civil commitment must be the sole responsibility of our state mental health systems. Continuing to require our state prisons to care for them is costly, not only economically, but in human terms. And would you like to add anything to that, Harry? And then I'll go back to, you know, some of the reasons.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that I remember clearly is when we got together and we finally were able to get the legislators to take a tour of Bridgewater State Hospital. And, you know, Senator Eldridge, who is one of the heroes that is trying to help us with making sure that at least the loved ones there are kept safe until we can get a plan together to move them out of the hands of the Department of Corrections. Senator Eldridge mentioned that the hospital itself is outdated and should be overseen by the Department of Mental Health in an effort to improve care. He said that the lawmakers didn't see significant changes since their last visit, but said staffing issues and conditions of the buildings are problems. Now, we already know from the Disability Law Center reporting every 6 months that the buildings are loaded with mold, environmental hazards, leaky pipes, restraint. The restraint issue is not going away. They're still continuing to illegally restrain. There is so many other issues that are mentioned in the Disability Law Center report. I'll get to shortly in this discussion. But the big problem here is even the commissioner. When you have a commissioner that reads a report from the Disability Law Center who has no agenda whatsoever, that denies the allegations in the reports by the Disability Law Center, you know that there's problems going on there. And I don't know why there's denial, other than to maybe save jobs or to not take the responsibility of the issues that are there. But definitely there is a whole list of items that need to be attended to until we can get this resolved. One of the ideas that I came up with is if you can't build a new structure for them right now, and even if you did build a new structure, it's going to take 2 to 3 years for completion, why not look into a program where you slowly start moving the loved ones over to Worcester Recovery Center. Let's say you take 8 to 10 a month, and you move the first 8 to 10, and you see how that goes. And if it's going okay, then go another 8 to 10. And eventually, in 24 months, you have the entire population that was at Bridgewater State Hospital moved into Worcester Recovery Center, where the Department of Mental Health is already overseeing that location, and security is already in place.
That's correct, Harry. And I made note to tell, to inform Senator Friedman yesterday during our meeting that, you know, family members who have moved on to places like Tewksbury State Hospital report really good conditions, cleanliness, well, really therapeutic treatment. They're family friendly. So that's a great goal, Harry. And back to WellPath, you mentioned in one decade, Harry, just the last decade, you mentioned the over 1,400 lawsuits, and they went to federal court. These are federal court lawsuits. And what was stated in a recent article by Summer Maxwell on WellPath was that it correlates these lawsuits correlate with higher rates of patient mortality than publicly managed health services. So when you have a private company such as WellPath, it correlates with higher rates of patient mortality than publicly managed health services. So this is a matter of life and death. And then in the press release of this latest Disability Law Center report, the January 2023, it says, in addition, systemic violations of Massachusetts law, violations of law regarding chemical restraints and seclusion persist at Bridgewater State Hospital. Now, listen to the word coming up, resulting in foreseeable physical and psychological harm. That means they're expecting it. If this does not change, it will be expected. You can foresee that it's going to bring physical and psychological harm, more harm to those already suffering and living with and trying to cope with and deal with a mental illness.
Joanna,
so,
if I can interrupt just a minute. You have another
absolutely.
You have another caller on. I don't know if they want to speak or anything. So every now and then, if you can just ask if there's anyone on with you to.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks, Leona. Is there anyone? Please weigh in. You know, it's such valuable information that we learn from one another how to care best and how to push best for the care of our loved ones. So if you're on just to listen, that's fine. But if you've called in to speak, please add your voice.
Okay, we have 978. Okay, perhaps they're just calling in to listen. Okay,
okay.
Donna, I'll just let you know when people come on so that you can actually...
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Another thing that Harry might be interested in that I just learned about and our listeners might be listened to, there's a company called, let me see, they are called Deeper Than Water, and they sent a survey to inmates. Now, these are not BSH patients, but inmates who are under the care of WellPath. So this survey was to check on, you know, what kind of medical and mental health services they were. And they said the results of this survey, now this again comes from the DLC, and they said that the results of this survey, egregious and human rights violations. There were a lot of accounts of human rights violations and negligence. And they said before WellPath versus after WellPath, many of these inmates said this is the worst treatment they ever received under WellPath. And they said, you know, the survey asked, what could be better? And over again, many inmates said, I could be treated as a human being. That would be better. They need to be treated humanely. What kind of country can we say we are if there's mistreatment of the mentally ill or mistreatment of inmates in our incarceration system? Let's see. Another thing, you know, right now, well past contract with the Department of Correction requires that the Department of Correction review and approve well past policies. So even though they're the medical provider, they have to march to the beat and the approval of the Department of Correction. So this means the penal system policies push the type of care and security or the lack of care for those with serious mental illness at Bridgewater State Hospital. And we're told that we're told by all the experts in the mental health field that the Department of Mental Health policies align better. They align better with the needs of people with mental illness. We're also now, there was a testimony at the State House on December 21 of this past year, this past December, and Attorney Tatum Pritchard of the DLC testified and confirmed that the Department of Mental Health has superior regulations for training their staff. That's so important that the staff is properly trained to work with the specific community of disabled people who have specific needs. And also by Attorney Tatum Pritchard of the Disability Law Center, she says that the DMH has a more developed de-escalation policy than Bridgewater State Hospital. We're talking about those chemical restraints that are done illegally that we're told report after report by the Bridgewater State Hospital. That's going to cause foreseeable damage and harm. How alarming is that to we family members who have loved ones there? It's alarming. It's heartbreaking. It's traumatizing. We've been told by patients that seeing another patient go through this is traumatizing for them, fearful, traumatizing. And also, Attorney Tatum Pritchard says that moving BSH to the Department of Mental Health would mean better outcomes. That's what we want, better outcomes for patients. DMH must comply with state law regarding seclusion and restraint, something BSH has failed to do. That's been documented in the January and July 2022 federally mandated DLC reports. And after two reports a year, it's still documented. It has not improved at all. So they're non-compliant of the law, according to the testimony at the State House by Tatum Pritchard. Non-compliant of the law. So that's where that is. And I can keep going on, but I'm going to see if Harry would like to say a word. But just in case, is there anyone on the lines that would like to speak? And if not, Harry will say a few words. Okay, go ahead, Harry.
So Donna, your communications raises another point that made me think about WellPath and all the lawsuits going on and what have you. New Hampshire Hempstead Hospital made a mistake, and they acknowledged that mistake by bringing WellPath in to manage their hospital, their state hospital. And what happened was a bunch of the legislators decided that they were going to go in and reconsider the contract after hearing from five different agencies, one of them being the Disabilities Law Center in Boston, NAMI of New Hampshire, New Hampshire Legal Assistance, and Waypoint of New Hampshire. They all raised a red flag on WellPath. And as a result of re-looking at the contract, basically what the legislators did, and this is why I brought up this point earlier, the legislators said, you know, okay, you know, we're in a contract that's a $52 million contract, but we want to bring in the DSSH to work with WellPath and not allow WellPath to handle this situation alone. And that's what they did. And that's exactly what I think should happen to Bridgewater State Hospital as an interim until they can fix this, is bring in the Department of Mental Health and let them see for themselves, let them see the issues that are ongoing and try to put in some solutions until we can get this transferred to the Department of Mental Health. A very simple example is we had a meeting last month with the Department of Corrections and WellPath Administrations, Executive Administrations, and we were told during that meeting that they were going to look into potentially taking away a delivery of a meal from the families and the loved ones during, you know, the weekly visits. And I can't remember the exact words that the superintendent used, but it was kind of like he was using that as a punishment, stating that, you know, that it wasn't intended for families and visitors, families and loved ones to have two or three meals per week. It was only intended to have one meal per week. So since we've been allowing two meals per week or, you know, we're going to take a look at this, and we may potentially take that meal away now. And these are the things that come from the Department of Corrections. And that's why there are so many issues with Bridgewater State Hospital, whereas WellPath, even if they wanted to do something or change something, everything has got to be put through the Department of Corrections, who have absolutely no experience with medical, mental health. They just write these policies based on the Department of Corrections, and that is it. There is no other way. And that's pretty sad, because we are talking about people with severe, serious mental illness, and yet we are allowing, our legislators are allowing the Department of Corrections to manage a hospital.
That's true. It's awful. And again, you know, I quote the Disability Law Center a lot today, because they have a federal mandate. They are a protection agency for those with disabilities. And they bring out the point that even the medical people who have been with Bridgewater, some of them have been there their whole careers. So their point of reference is not one of community and the recovery and the least restrictive. Their point of view, their experience is that of, you know, being under the Department of Correction, the correctional system. And the correctional system is not built. It's not a mental health expert. And that's why we are pushing so hard, to have DMH, the Department of Mental Health, treatment and oversight and care and being in charge, because this is their expertise. These are their people. And we're told that Harry brought up a point about having a meal taken away. So I've got 2 points. I'm going to bounce forward, and then I'm going to bounce back. So the DLC, we have noted the disparity, which is what Harry was saying about the meal. So this is disparity. WellPath has a double standard that favors staff over patients. Patients were not able to have their families order food in. We couldn't even have that one meal when administration and staff were doing so. Made them second-class citizens. WellPath cited COVID as the reason, yet this was nonsensical. Nonsensical because they were doing what they did not allow the families to do. Number two, disparity. Staff has coolers available in view of patients, but patients are not allowed to get the fresh water. They must use the old rusty pipes in their rooms to get water. Disparity number three, staff has access to air conditioning where patients have had to suffer horrific conditions. We've been really fighting hard on this issue, calling it unbearable, an oven being locked up in a small room on a top floor with heat and unbearable temperatures in the hottest of the days. And at this time, there's still no agreement for market improvements. And disparity number four, in the past, staff could make use of the bathroom when they needed to. If you have to go, you have to go. But during the family one-hour visit, if a patient, a patient with mental illness got an urgent and sudden need, and this can happen when drinking a soda or a drink, a result of their medication, or they just have to go, or other reasons, and they needed a bathroom break, then their family visit was terminated. You have to go out to the bathroom. You can't come back and finish your one small hour with your family. Even if they have been able to unfinish their meal with their family, there was a point where a patient just could not wait. He went out to go to the bathroom. He couldn't come back and finish his half-eaten meal with his family. And now they want to take, you know, family meals away from us. And we have fought for years for this because what we want is family connection. And family involvement should be welcomed as informed and healing aspects to the care of their loved ones. Family involvement is important. Loving family, they've been plucked away from their families, and that family involvement should be welcomed as informed and healing aspects to the care of their loved ones. And yes, I know I repeated that for emphasis. Involvement in their loved ones' care is more accessible in the Department of Mental Health. And so that makes the Department of Mental Health, it makes life easier. It makes their lives easier where lives are difficult enough, as relayed by those family members who have loved ones who have moved from the Bridgewater State Hospital to a DMH facility. So many of the family members who have loved ones who have moved on to DMH tell us, they tell us how they are experiencing much better treatment than they did at Bridgewater State Hospital. Would you like to add something, Harry?
Just again, back to the Department of Corrections overseeing Bridgewater State Hospital. We already know what the Disability Law Center has written about Bridgewater State Hospital, about, you know, employees not being able to feel like they're not being able to go back to the administration and voice their opinions or their input. That in itself correlates with the Department of Corrections overseeing WellPath in Bridgewater State Hospital. Once you start getting that culture in place, things will only get worse if it's not addressed. And I can tell you, as soon as I read that Disability Law Center report, I was in touch with the Senior Vice President of WellPath. And to date, she has been very responsive, but on this issue, I have not heard any feedback from her. And I'm hopeful that she's looking into it. I suggested they call all employees and have a big meeting to get to the root of the problem, the root of the issues, so that, you know, they can resolve whatever issues are concerning to the employees that they're unable to voice without the possibility of retaliation. One of the issues that I just came across the other night is, and I want to ask a question about the Department of Corrections in a moment, but, you know, there's little things that you hear when you're in the visiting area. It could be from employees leaving the shift, coming in. It could be from the guards that are at the window. But an example of what I heard the other night was, it was disturbing. You had people talking about cockroaches inside the cells, the rooms of loved ones, and insects that were, you know, on the walls, and they were laughing about it. They were joking about it. And that, you know, that's part of the culture. That's Department of Correction culture. They think it's funny. They don't have a loved one in there. They don't care. And that told me a lot about the particular employees that were on duty that evening. You know, And it just gives you a sense of the poor culture that's ongoing inside Bridgewater State Hospital and the Department of Corrections. What I don't understand, I fully understand what's going on with Bridgewater State Hospital, but I can't imagine someone with a serious mental illness that is at the Department of Corrections with little medical care. I've never really delved into that piece of it because my focus has always been on Bridgewater State Hospital. But I don't know, maybe if you could shed some light on that, Donna, or Leona, on how is that inside of a prison where somebody has serious mental illness, yet the medical treatment is not as such as a hospital and what they need on a daily basis.
You know, as you mentioned, this is something that you, Donna, and you and your organization has been working on, and this is why I highly admire what you're doing, because as you mentioned, WellPath has over 1,000 lawsuits filed against them, and their founder is involved with the courts for bribery and, you know, corruption. So we need to have independent providers going into the prison, and I am fully and totally in agreement with what you and Donna are working on, and so many others that have been listening in on your shows and following your previous interviews. But we do need to do something about this, because we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions, and it's not going to be solved by putting everybody in prison. And I don't know if you and Donna remember when they used to have mental institutions throughout the country. They closed them all down. It's almost as though they knew what the plan was to put these people in prison, prisons for profit, and all of these large corporations are out there investing in the prisons. So it's almost as though they didn't care, or they don't care, to help the mentally ill, but to make money off of them. That's my feeling.
On page 42 of the current Disability Law Center report, the January 2023, it talks, Section 8 talks about the limitations on persons served. They're called persons served by WellPath. I prefer patients. But limitations on persons served, access to medical care. And the very first sentence of page 42 of Section 8 says that the DLC and the person served concerns about the person served's difficulties accessing medical care are ongoing, from requesting care and getting an appointment with on-site medical staff to receiving test results and follow-up after a procedure or specialist consultation. Persons served report lack of communication and delayed care. At the same time, the persistent presence of environmental toxins throughout Bridgewater State Hospital makes reliable access to medical care all the more important. And then it goes on to say, DOC and WellPath have not implemented the DLC, the Disability Law Center's recommendation from our 2022 reports to enhance care by providing additional accessible avenue for persons served to request medical evaluation and treatment. So they're still not getting they're not getting the care that's being recommended by the oversight of this federally mandated Disability Law Center Protection Agency.
Yep. And Donna, I think it was in December 2022 that the Massachusetts State Prison System was supposed to reform how it cares for inmates with serious mental illness and supervised prisoners that are at risk. And I remember that was like a year-long civil rights investigation by the U.S. Department of Justice, and they were going to go in and do an investigation on how to improve the medical care for serious mental illness patients that are incarcerated. And then they were supposed to have an independent monitor from the Yale School of Medicine Psychiatry. I believe the name of the person was Rena Kapoor, and she was supposedly tasked with ensuring compliance with the agreement. Now, I have never heard any updates to this, if it's in play, if it's improving, has there been any changes made? Do either of you know?
That's funny you should ask, Carrie, because yesterday at the meeting with Senator Cindy Friedman, she was talking about the DOJ investigation of 2020, and, you know, they specifically spotlighted solitary confinement and all of the ills and the abuses, and she feels that they're not really moving forward very quickly, although efforts are being made, and I'm applauding every effort. I do think, you know, efforts are being made, but, yeah, it's a long, hard fight. And Senator Friedman, there's times even I, who never gives up, you begin to feel hopeless after years and years of advocating. And she said, do not give up. Keep pushing forward. So, you know, that was encouraging. But talk about investigations, Harry. And I don't have it earmarked yet. We just got the report. But I did read in this report that there are four ongoing investigations by the Department of – ooh, I think I found it. Excuse me. Okay, page 5. DLC has initiated 4 new investigations pursuant to our Federal Protection and Advocacy Authority after making a probable cause finding that persons served had been or were being subjected to abuse and or neglect at Bridgewater State Hospital. 3 are investigations into complaints of violent attacks on persons served. That's my loved one. That's your loved one. 2 within Bridgewater State Hospital and 1 on an individual awaiting evaluation in the intensive unit when they come in. The 4th is an investigation into BSH policies and practices concerning the application of restraint, seclusion, and involuntary medication initiated for the reasons described below. And that's, I can read all that, but I think that's sufficient for now. So there are 4 investigations of abuse and attacks. That is not acceptable. Can you imagine people who are seriously mentally ill being attacked and harmed? Harry, that's our loved ones. That's, you know, all of our Bridgewater State Hospital families. That's our loved ones. And we not only, this is something I love about our family groups, is that we not only love and care for deeply our own loved one who suffers with mental illness. It is so unanimous that we care about all of them, all of them. I feel like they're all, I've often said, they're all my grandsons. You know, I'm fighting for my grandson, but they're all my grandsons.
Can I just recommend something for your group too, Donna and Harry, is to connect with the National Alliance for Mentally Ill. Connect with Jean Gore. She is the founder of National Shattering Silencing Coalition. They advocate for the mentally ill. That's what they are about. If you could connect with and FAM. Now, FAM has been encouraging everyone to challenge the DOC, to challenge the state legislative members to go into the prisons. We need to get legislative members to go into the prisons at least once or twice a year to monitor, to see these prisoners, you know, to incarcerated individuals, the mentally ill, and all of them. So FAM, if you can, please connect with FAM. Connect with National.
How do you spell that?
FAM is FAMM, and that is Families Against Mandatory Minimums.
Okay.
And then you have CURE with Charlie Sullivan, who founded it with his wife, founded CURE National. In 1975, Charlie Sullivan is with CURE, Citizens United for Rehabilitative Errands. These, if we can connect, all of you, connect with these people because they are all about exactly what you're doing. So it's FAM, it's NAMI. You're familiar with NAMI, National Alliance for Mentally Ill?
Yes.
You know, CURE, Citizens United for Rehabilitative Errands. And there's just so many more, National Shattering Silencing Coalition with Jean Gore and her group, and they do national work, and they write letters to legislative members, they write letters to the prisons, they do an ongoing advocacy in those areas.
You know, Leona, because of your recommendation last time, I did connect with Jean Gore. And right now, our very next FEMI committee meeting, we have lined up people willing to join in our efforts. So we're going to one at a time see how many we can add to our group. And we just need a little bit more manpower. But, you know, I did initiate with Jean Gore, and, you know, I really want to carry it forward. So I'm hoping, you know, FEMI will grow a bit so we have a little bit more manpower. And that's the plan.
Okay. And we have other callers. I just want to say real quickly as well, there are groups on Facebook that deal with mental illnesses and things like that. So whenever I come across it, I'd like to just go in and invite any of you that want to join the group so that you can also get more support and also network with them as well. The month of June, we are planning on the whole month, the entire month of June. I've been working with some of the advocates. We're planning on doing a national call-in, letter writing, emailing. And it won't take anyone's time to leave their homes, and it's going to be to address all issues of concern that we have with the penal system. And that would include mental illnesses. That would include oversight of the DOC. It would include restoration of prisoners' rights. It would include abolishing the death penalty, which to me is mixed messages. You don't kill someone because they kill someone, whether you're government or not. So there's a lot of issues that we're going to be addressing in the month of June. We have been compiling a list of names, titles, addresses, telephone numbers, and emails of people across the country, including the media. We have over 1,000 emails for the medias around the country. But these are some things, too, if you want to participate in the month of June. We're still continuing to put all this together. But mental illness...
Yes.
In the prisons is very, very, it's very serious, and it needs to be addressed. Oh, you have
I have actually shared that, Leona, because you shared it with me, and I passed it on to FEMI, and I passed it on to the Family Resource Bridgewater Group, and there's the issues you mentioned being addressed during the month of June 2023 coming up. Two of those issues are right up our alley. I mean, I care about every one of those, of course. But oversight of DOC staff nationwide, demand for medical, psychological, independent providers, getting the Department of Mental Health involved. So it's not just Harry and I crying for this. It's nationwide. It's nationwide, and it's awesome. And Leona, thank you. You're one of the leaders in this. And I was hoping you would speak about that today because I, for one, am very excited about what you are doing.
We'll be talking about it every Tuesday. We've been coming together to talk about it, and people are getting the information. But it's not me, Donna. It's the highest power. We have somebody, the Most High, that's going to see us through this. And this is going to be successful this year. You have callers, so I'm going to put myself on mute again and let you 802-508-978. If any of you want to speak, please do. Donna's waiting to hear from you.
Hi, everyone. Anybody want to jump in and help Harry and I out?
Hello, Donna. This is Mary Ellen. Can you hear me?
I can. Hi, Mary Ellen.
Hi.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. I was wondering, really was I wondering, shall I give an example of what chemical restraints, what's involved in that?
Oh, that would be wonderful. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm speaking about a loved one that was there at Bridgewater State Hospital probably 14 months plus. He doesn't remember if it was at the beginning of a couple of times that he had to go back. But, yes, he said six people came into his room, full body gear, shields, face shields, et cetera, and flattened him. And they stood on his ankles and they stood on his hands.
Oh,
and
my
then
goodness.
A nurse, yes, and then a nurse came in to give him a shot. I asked him, and I'd asked him in the past, but I asked him recently again. I said, were you resisting taking medications? And he said, I was sitting down, but I didn't ask. I don't know if he was sitting on his bed or a chair, but he was sitting down. And,
terrible.
So that is one example. Later we can talk if there's time for air about the air conditioning and the locked rooms. But I wanted to say, and you said it very well earlier, I don't know if you're quoting someone or not, but I feel, and of course most of us would feel, that these conditions do not, they further make things worse for our loved ones, both physically and mentally. This just makes things worse for them, and we need to all try to make changes for them. How can society do this to our loved ones and not, I guess, not, I mean, it's not just society, but it's just that everybody needs to understand that this is not improving. It's not going to help our seriously mentally ill folks. So I guess that's it for now, unless you want to ask me more questions.
Yeah, I would love to. You know, Mary Ellen, I know you had experience with both Bridgewater, well, you and your loved one, with both Bridgewater and the Department of Mental Health. So I wondered if you could give us some, like, before, you know, what you feel is different about Bridgewater State Hospital versus, you know, the care or the treatment at the Department of Mental Health for your loved one and your experience?
Well, I can say my loved one is stubborn or that his mental illness doesn't allow him to take advantage of everything, but he has a room that he can come in and out of and go all over the floor, all over his unit. He has a telephone. He does have access to their televisions, but he uses his telephone now. He can have visitors just about almost any time. We go to see him every 2 weeks. We can bring him food, where you just can't do that at Bridgewater without going through the 9 yards, and now it sounds like they're trying to eliminate some of that. So things can be sent through the mail to him without, you know, there's just not the restrictions that there were at Bridgewater. And so even though he's not a completely happy camper, he certainly is in better hands at this point. And there may be other things. Can't think of them off the top of my head.
Well, you were referring to the air conditioning. That was a big issue because I know Harry can tell of a situation with his loved one and how the air conditioning affected him and my own loved one, you know, my grandson. You know, I mean, it was really brutal. He would use words like it's brutal. So if you want to speak a little bit of the lack of air conditioning at WellPath, and, you know, the families work so hard thinking of every which way to mitigate. So, you know, I'd love to get your take on that.
Sure. Well, my loved one expressed that he could not open his windows. And part of that, I guess, was because they call their whatever units, whatever they have is so-called,
conditioned air?
Yes, conditioned air, whether that has something to do with dehumidifiers, but it's not, it certainly isn't enough. So here it goes. The loved ones do not, they can't open their windows. Their doors are closed. There is no airflow. And we've all tried, like, but, you know, if they can't put in a full system of air conditioning, they should be allowed to be, we have the, you know, the small machines, portable ones. And whether it's in the hallways or in the TV rooms and leave the doors open, I mean, that's just awful. My loved one roasted. I mean, he was very uncomfortable. And so isn't everyone else. And it's just not fair. It's not humane. Everyone else can go home and leave. And plus, I was told, you know, my loved one said, you know, if he needed to go to the nurse's office, that was air conditioned. And, you know, there may have been some other offices and places air conditioned if the residents, you know, person served had gone, but my loved one did not go to many groups or if any. So he didn't have the access of whatever other rooms that may be. I don't know if the library, there probably were a few other places, but in general, people were suffering, and that's not right.
I heard one patient say that he would lie on the cement floor with a wet towel just to try to get some relief. Harry, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I'll touch base on this a little bit with you because I had a personal communications with the administrator. They were not good communications. They were very harshful towards his lack of leadership. And one of the things that I did, we met down in the visitor's room by accident. And I said to him, and it was during last summer when the temperatures were just brutal. My son had just left. He was soaking wet. And, you know, I said, you know, Roland, why don't you take a look at empty rooms like this, the visitor's room, comfortable, it has air conditioning, it could probably house 10 to 15 people at a time, you bring security staff in, let them just sit in there for an hour and rotate them each hour. Mm-hmm. He said, that's a great idea. He said, we're doing that right now at the chapel. He said, but I like your idea, we're going to look at that. Well, lo and behold, he looked at it, but he didn't do it. It was just more talk from him. So, you know, during this conversation, I said, you know, Roland, what is the contingency plan here? This is a hospital. And his plan that was communicated to me was more fluids, fix the fan on the floor, one fan if it breaks, popsicles, and ambient temperatures, taking temperatures throughout the day of the facility to make sure it's you know, they're comfortable. And I'm like, that's the contingency plan for the hospital? So based on that, I wrote a contingency plan a few weeks ago in preparation for the summer. And I said to Roland, the leadership, I said, you know, you should be looking and monitoring the forecast throughout the summer. You should follow the recommended room temperature. If the temperatures rise above a recommended temperature, immediately activate the heat contingency plan. Ambient temperatures that he spoke about was basically done in the general area. It wasn't done in each individual cell. And I said, that should be done, and it should be done every half hour to every hour. And I said, maintaining a stable body temperature within normal ranges, it assists in optimizing the metabolic process of the bodily functions. That needs to be continued throughout the heat wave. And I said 24/7 monitoring of cramping, heat exhaustion, rashes, stress, dizziness, headaches, and other related illnesses. And I said, and I reiterated in this plan to rotate loved ones to all available air-conditioned locations to bring them the most relief possible with constant rotation. Monitor the loved ones to make sure they are wearing loose and light-colored clothing. Monitor loved ones' activities throughout the day. Reduce high stressful activities. Take additional showers. Use light linens on bed if allowed. Eat small meals and eat more often. When loved ones are outdoors, allow them to sit in a shaded area. Look at the possibility of purchasing a large open tent. Add additional fans and portable air conditioning units. If that cannot be done, then hire security staff for three or four hours during the high heat so that they can have the portable air conditioning. And then once the heat subsides, then you remove the portable air conditioning until the next day. Be on alert to take the initiative to help those with serious mental illness reduce their symptoms from the extreme heat. Extreme heat may trigger mental illness symptoms, causing additional stress. I can go on with the policy that I wrote, but what you just heard from me is better than the four-word policy that a hospital currently has in place. And, you know, it's going to take all of the families to communicate to the administration that this needs, we want this done. It can no longer be, oh, we're just going to give, you know, these four words, and then we're going to take off in our cars, and we're going to go home for the night, leaving loved ones in a cell that is, you know, close to 100 degrees during the night. So it's being addressed, whether they listen to us, whether they make changes. You know, that's yet to be seen, but I will tell you that the Disability Law Center has taken notice, and they put it in their report this time. So that's the good news. Now we need to just make sure that they follow through.
So Mary Ellen, any other aspects that you might like to cover?
I think I'm not sure of the exact timings, but they were, you know, they're all, I think they're still, the same things are still happening, but my, yeah, I'm sorry, I can't say his name. My loved one had expressed they were locked in their rooms all day long. That I think he was saying that they could go out from 9 to 11 and at 12:20 and 4:45, I think just for, it's not that they can go out. They had their, they ate in their rooms. And I don't know. I think that if he was allowed, I mean, if he had wanted to go to more groups, he would have been allowed to do that. But there's certainly specific times for everything. But just the fact that they're in their rooms all day long. And I think with some other discussions somewhere, somebody said something that they could knock on their door and then ask to leave. But I don't know if my loved one did that or not.
Donna?
Yes?
Can I come in here?
Oh, please do. This is. Would you like to give your name or speak anonymously?
Michelle.
Okay. Hi, Michelle. Please weigh in.
I want to speak as far as the chemical restraint. When my loved one first went there in 2016, when DOC was in charge, he was chemically restrained 14, 15 times. And
oh, my God.
Now, that's intense. I mean, especially when you first come there and you're like, you're in a bad situation. But also, going forward, he has spoke about when WellPath took over, how you would see the person starting to de-escalate, and they still will come in with their black suits and their shields and, like, drag them into the room and sedate them, you know. And his biggest thing that he told me is the lack of training that the staff has. Because, I mean, they should try to, when they're getting calmed down, they shouldn't have to use the chemical restraint. And then, like, just the trauma that the other guys are seeing this happening.
That's right.
Yeah, Michelle, you know, I was asked questions. I gave testimony at the State House on December 21st on behalf of our loved ones. And afterward, the Senator Eldridge and Representative Michael Day, you know, had questions. And they asked about those restraints and what the family thought of them. But I was able, thanks to you, relay some of that sentiment to them of how harmful it was, you know, to their psyche to see other patients suffer that way. And in this latest report, You know, the most disturbing thing about the chemical restraints are that even after a patient has calmed down, they might be resting on their bed, reading, they're calm, they will not rescind the order, and they still force them with the SWAT gear and the four long needles. And it talks about how they attacked one very elder, slight gentleman, and how one person bled from having this procedure done, these forced chemical restraints. So it's all very alarming. And, you know, on this podcast with the attorney from DLC, she says it's not like the patients don't have a voice. They have a voice. So they're speaking up, but she said they have a voice, but no one's listening. And in a sense, yep. You know, we family members have this voice, and sometimes we feel like no one's listening. But that's why I'm very grateful to Leona Brandau, who's my fierce fellow advocate and become a true friend of my heart, someone I care for deeply. I care for her son deeply. And, you know, I'm very grateful for her. I'm grateful for people like Leona who are giving us voice, not only us, but so many in the system, inmates and advocates. And, Leona, I just thank you because, you know, it's heartbreaking to hear our loved ones, the patients, the person served at Bridgewater State Hospital do not have, they have a voice, but they're not being listened to. And we
Donna,
need to be listened
also,
to.
Donna, every also, one of you, Donna, every when, one of you yeah, on also, this, every one of you on the show today are clear examples of what advocacy is all about, whether you're calling in to listen or whether you're calling in to speak out. I get embarrassed when people say that about me, and I ask that you not, but I will say one thing. We are all in this together. We are all advocates. We are true advocates. There have been advocates that have had fights, that have had disagreements, and they all of a sudden, they don't want anything to do with you. But you girls, you and even the men, all the male advocates, I want to thank all of you because you inspire me to even go further in my advocacy work. I've been an advocate for over 20 years.
Can I just say one more thing?
Yes.
Okay. My loved one, I forgot to add that too, is he's at DMH now, and the quality of care that he's getting is unbelievable. You understand? There's people there to talk to. He doesn't have to bang on his door. He can come open and shut and speak to people. They treat them with respect and compassion.
And where is this?
He's in with the recovery.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean, like he said, the people are trained so much more to have the compassion and care about how the person and listen to the person.
I think it's more than training. I think it's more than training. I think it's the heart. Every individual,
yes.
you can be in any position in this country. You can be in any legislative members. You can be a prison official, a guard, whatever the case may be. Police out there, there's good police, there's bad police, there's good correctional. But the problem is when something happens or when things are not happening, they say these police need more or these people need more training. It's the heart. It's the way they were brought up. Because I'm sure they, in the back of their minds, they're thinking about their what would it be like if it was their brother or sister, father, mother, grandmother, grandfather, you know, son or daughter. And that's what is the most important thing is for us to remember in our hearts. Do we want to try to help these people or do we want to be the thugs out there that are trying to hurt them? And unfortunately, there's a lot of people in prison that are correctional officers and officials. There's a lot of good ones. But because they don't expose the bad ones, they become endangered. They become endangered because people start to hate all correctional officers or all police officers or all prison officials. When in fact there's a lot of good ones, they're just not speaking out. And if their corrupt peers think that little of them to do worse instead of trying to do as their good peers are doing, then they don't really care about their peers. That's all I wanted to say, but I'm going to let you go. Donna, I want to, you know, there's a lot more on the calls right now, so if anyone wants to speak up, Donna's and Harry are waiting to hear from you. Again, I'm going to put myself on mute.
Anyone else? Okay, before we end, this is a statement from the Disability Law Center report, the current report, page 5, and it says, I think this sums up what we've been talking about, the need for Bridgewater State Hospital to be placed under the Department of Mental Health rather than the Department of Corrections. So here's what the report says. The poor conditions and quality of care at Bridgewater State Hospital are not improving. At the same time, DOC and its contractor WellPath refuse to acknowledge that BSH policies and practices concerning the administration of involuntary medication on persons served plainly violate Massachusetts law. After well over 8 years of continuous oversight at Bridgewater State Hospital, the Disability Law Center again urgently calls on the Commonwealth to protect the people with complex mental health needs who are forced to submit to evaluation and treatment at Bridgewater State Hospital by transferring oversight of this population to the Department of Mental Health and building a new hospital. And that's, you know, this is not personal against Bridgewater State Hospital and some of the great people who work there. This is not a personal vendetta. This is not a personal agenda. This is family members who love, deeply love and care for their loved ones. We are only seeking to procure that continuum of proper and compassionate health care. And that's our bottom line. So would anyone else like to say anything before the show closes?
Donna, I'll say one more thing before I leave here. I read an article from the Department of, the Disability Law Center in 2017 from the executive director. Her name was Christine Griffin.
She was fabulous.
Her. Yeah. Well, in closing, this is what she said. Despite the progress, the slow progress that Bridgewater has made, Bridgewater must be transferred to the Department of Mental Health. Bridgewater will never become a mental health facility with a therapeutic culture while it remains under the Department of Correction. It is still a prison. We cannot expect the Department of Corrections to change all of its rules and punishment culture because they reflect its mission to incarcerate and punish. But it is that culture and those rules and regulations that can exacerbate a patient's condition or prevent his ability to obtain treatment.
And I would just like to end with saying that I applaud Leona's suggestion that it's, you know, the highest power is what we need. I think we need, you know, we need our legislators, we need compassionate people, but we need a higher power to guide us and move us forward. I'm ready.
Donna, you still have 15 minutes left. You know, I extended this show when I set it up for an hour and a half.
So okay.
You have time if anyone wants to speak out. Again, what you're talking about is very much needed in this country and in the state, especially right now. So what you're talking about is very much needed.
Great, and I know Harry has to run off very shortly, so I just want to say thank you, Harry, so much for, you know, the support and the work that you are doing to help our loved ones. You've been a true warrior and a fellow advocate, and I very much appreciate your heart.
Thank you, Harry, too, from the bottom
you.
Of my
heart. Yes,
on as well. You know,
we have a whole bunch of people in our advocacy group that also do a lot of work. Thank you, guys. Have a good day.
You too, Harry. Bye.
Nice hearing from you. It takes a team, and this is a team, exactly. This is unbelievable that you have such a team on this show right now. focus in.
I'm so grateful for them. You know, Leona, it's just been an amazing experience. Kudos to one of the family members, one of the fathers. He set up a family support group. And, you know, it was going to be just kind of about support. But when you're talking about the issues that we're dealing with, it coalesced into support and advocacy. And this group of family members have been amazing. I knew, you know, right from the get-go of my experience with Bridgewater State Hospital, unfortunately 9 whole years ago, I started to, you know, from my very first time there when a family stepped up to help us with the process, you know, I started to learn what incredible human beings they truly are, my inspiration, and we've coalesced into such a group, a caring group, a group that encourages, that supports. We even laugh together sometimes, you know, in spite of our circumstances, we get a little bit of comic relief. So I'm just very grateful for all of them. They're an amazing group, and we each have our part to play. And I tell them, you know, I don't want anyone feeling guilty if they don't have the wherewithal to advocate beyond their own loved one, because if, you know, we can only do what we can do when we can do it. I have the luxury of being, what do you call it? I want to say resigned, retired. And so I have, you know, a little bit more time to put into the advocacy. So I don't want to ever, when I'm applauding people who advocate, I never want to make anyone feel bad if they don't have the time to do so. But they still support us and love us and care for us and, you know, champion us on. And they're just all so valuable. Leona,
you know,
so many,
valuable. I remember years ago when a tragedy happened, and I wasn't prepared, nor was my loved one. He was suffering from severe depression at the time, but I wasn't familiar with resources. I didn't know who to turn to. You know, I attempted suicide. I woke up in a hospital or mental health facility after. To this day, I don't know how long I was in the hospital. I don't know what was going on at the time. It was just so traumatic for me because I never expected it to happen. I knew he was severely depressed, but I didn't know what to do about it. But sometimes when someone is severely depressed, it can go either way. I thought it was suicide. I told my colleagues at social services, I was afraid I'd go home and find my son had committed suicide. Instead, it was homicide. But the thing is, people don't understand. There's a lot of family members out there that don't know which way to turn. It's their first time. And Donna, this is why I do extensive research. Everything I find, I post it on Facebook in all the groups, because even though not everybody's from the same state, the problems are the same. Groups are joining all these organizations from every state, all over the country. So the resources are going to be available to someone somewhere at some time. But that's why it's so important to get involved, because a lot of people that don't think they have any knowledge to help someone else that's going through the same thing they are going through or maybe went through, they know a little bit more than someone else. And what you're doing is you're educating everybody, you're helping everybody, and even those who have loved ones in the same situation as yours that aren't as active, they're learning from you. And what they learn, I hope they'll share with others, because there's a lot of people out there that are hurting so badly because they don't know which way to turn or who to turn to. So what all of you are doing, I admire. And when I hear people in society talk about or complain about the problems, but they do nothing to get involved, they're not even coming on to listen. They don't do anything but talk about it. And nothing gets done if it's only talk. It has to be action. So I thank
right,
you.
That's correct.
I thank everybody that you've been bringing on with you. I thank you for the education you've been bringing to us all, the research, everything that we can share with others to prevent them from going through the same pain, sorrow, and suffering.
Leona, I want to thank you so much for this podcast. And also, when I first went to Bridgewater, Donna was my saving grace. I didn't know anything about the digestive system or anything. She took me under her wing, and she guided me for 5 years when I was over there. She taught me everything, which I was totally blessed.
Now, is this Annette? Are you Annette or Mary Ellen?
No, I'm Michelle.
Michelle, that's what I'm talking about. See, you're here. You listened to Donna. She helped you, and you're here now. You could be elsewhere, but you're on this podcast right now. You're talking. You're sharing, and that's what it's all about. Everybody that comes on here, if they can just share, if they can just learn something, that's a miracle. Donna is, to me, Donna is the best.
Mm.
She is
she's awesome. You know something? On my worst day, I could be falling apart. I call her. She picks me up. But like she said to me one day when I thanked her, she said, "You do the same for me. My loved one's no longer in Bridgewater, but I'll never stop fighting for the guys that are left behind in Bridgewater." And Donna can vouch for that. I speak up. Right, Donna?
That's right. And Michelle, I love you so much for that. And as Michelle said, she's left Bridgewater and other family members have left, but they're still with us. They're still fighting for us. They've learned to care about us and one another and our loved ones. It's so impressive, Leona, that although they're not still at Bridgewater State Hospital, they could easily move on, forget about us, and they don't. And if Mary Ellen's on, I learned a little lesson because
yes.
I tend to be a talker, and I'm known as Chatty Cathy or CC for short. And I, for the first time, I got to have a phone call with Mary Ellen, and I got to listen. And she had so much to say and so articulate. And I made a vow, Mary Ellen, of course, not on a talk show, but, you know, at meetings, I'm going to try to talk less, leave some dead space for people to jump in, because I was so impressed with what you had to say. Everything that you relayed to me was very meaningful, and I was grateful. So my goal is to, not on a talk show where I'm supposed to talk, but at meetings and with other family members, you know, poke me in the eye, step on my foot, say, "Donna, remember, you're supposed to listen more, talk less."
I can say one thing. Oh, I'm sorry, Mary Ellen. I just want to say real quick, I can say one thing to talking. One of the things is a lot of our loved ones, like you mentioned, that are suffering from mental illnesses are individuals that never opened up about a lot of things that happened in their life. And so talking is one of the best things for anyone to do, is let it all out. When I was in elementary school, my parents went to the school for parent teachers, whatever it was, and Mrs. Childs told my mother, "Leona's a beautiful person, but there's one problem she has." And my mother asked what that was, and she told my mother, "Leona doesn't know when to stop talking." But see, the thing is, I let things out. I let things out. And that's what we all have to do. Let it out. Mary Ellen, I am so sorry. I'll let you go back to what you were saying.
Oh, no, that's all right. I just feel that I learned so much from the group. And it's just that I just don't always myself. It's my own idiosyncrasies. I don't know how to jump in. And I... Even though we're, you know, even on the podcast now, you know, it's not completely like talking to just one person. So I've never been great at talking to a group of people, although I will try harder.
You're learning to become a leader. That's what it's all about, a leader, not a follower, but a leader. Don't be afraid of anybody, because everyone stands to learn something, even from you. Remember that.
Well, thank you. I don't think Donna should stop talking.
thank
I learned
you.
So much from her. We all learn so much from you, and you have worked so hard, you and Bob, and I don't know how you do it, but keep doing it if you can, and I'll keep trying also.
Thank you, Mary Ellen. Thank you so much.
That's
You're
awesome.
Welcome.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Hi, Annette.
Hi. I apologize for jumping in late. I did have a previous engagement, and I only have a few moments before I actually go visit my son. But I listened in for the past 15 minutes, and I just want to jump in and just say that this group is amazing. And the sharing of knowledge, the sharing of information helps so many, whether they're part of this group or not. Because the more we can talk to the outsiders that are not part of this group or talk to even a stranger about the seriousness of mental illness and mental health, you never know what's going on behind the scenes in someone's life. And my passion has always been for preventative care. I have always felt that we need to help before something tragic happens because we don't want anyone to end up in Bridgewater.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to also say that my son spent 6, 7, 8 months in Bridgewater. I lost track. And he transferred to a DMH facility. He's been there a few months. The difference that I have seen in my son in the past few months has been just incredible. This is something that we have been begging for 10 years. My son's been struggling for 10 years, and we were not able to get help. And I truly feel where he is right now in the short period of time, they have done more for him than anyone has ever done in the past 10 years. And I'm so grateful for the DMH facility that he's in. And it just hurts my heart when I think back of those that are stuck in Bridgewater, stuck there not being able to get the help, the resources, the right level of support, and where their health is continuously deteriorating, and no one will do anything about it. This is where changes need to happen. And I don't recall who said it, but we need to stop talking and push for change and action in such a strong way where we cannot be shut down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to bring this up right now, but there was a tragedy that just happened last night close to my community in Andover, Massachusetts. And it just breaks my heart that we are constantly waking up to these tragic events happening. Everyone keeps talking and talking and talking. But when the heck is someone going to pick up the ball, run with it, and do something about it? Our legislators need to get off their ass and start doing something. And
amen.
I'll end there.
So, amen.
Thank you
so much. Thank you so much for that. And that I really, that really hit home to this whole country. Thank you so much. Donna, we have 3 minutes, so if you'd like to give the audience your contact information or anything else that you'd like to say or any of your members of your group.
Great. I know I would like to, you know, call anyone who doesn't have an understanding of mental illness, and unless you've experienced it firsthand, you may lack that knowledge as I once did. And I just ask that you just educate yourself at least in the basics, and please, please find it deep within your hearts and deep within yourself to bring up that compassion for them, for people suffering with mental illness. Please, you know, that's the cry of my heart, is to be compassionate. And so anyway, you know, back to FEMI, the Family and Friends of Individuals with Mental Illness, the grassroots organization that I founded. What we're doing is we're seeking justice. And justice, as we see it, is treatment and not punishment. So to learn more about FEMI, you can go to ffimi.blog. That's kind of our website for now, but we keep posting wonderful articles. And, you know, so ffimi.blog. Or if you want to contact us by email with any kind of question, with any interest in our organization, you would go to ffimi.inquiry@gmail.com. And I'm going to repeat that, ffimi.inquiry@gmail.com. Come, and we would love to hear from you, and just spread around that compassion. Scatter compassion, scatter joy. We all need it. We all struggle on one level or another.
And I want to also let everyone know that Donna and her team will be back with us on March 1st, Thursday, March 1st.
Oh, actually, Leona, Leona, they rescheduled my husband. It's the only appointment he could get. So the appointment that got canceled today is rescheduled March 1st. But you give me another date, and I would love to come back on.
Email me another convenient time for you and the group, and I will definitely schedule that. And I want to thank you again, Donna, for being on, and all of you that are on with them, Mary Ellen, Annette, Michelle, Harry, all of you that came on, and there's more I can't even mention because some of them didn't even speak. But I just want to thank all of you. I think what you're doing is an awesome job. It's what's so needed in the United States of America. Again, we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses. In the prisons, mass incarceration, should not be incarcerated. They need to be in rehabilitative programs. I interviewed Marion Jacobs yesterday. She speaks of the same thing. Marion Jacobs is a psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands. She speaks often about the comparison between the prisons in other countries compared to mass incarceration in the United States. She is also in agreement with a lot of the things that you've been talking about today. So I thank you for being on, and I look forward to having you on again. Donna, you can let me know when a good time is, and I will reschedule. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Leona. Thank you. God bless you.
God bless you. Thank all of you, and keep everyone in prayer because we really need it in this day and age with everything going on around the world. So thank you so much. We will now be ending this episode.
Bye-bye.